You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. The show is brought to you in partnership with Progressive Masculinity and headteacherchat.com. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I am Vicky Maguire. I'm the founder of We Lead Well, and as many of you will already know, We Lead Well is not just a podcast. Although the podcast is a huge element of what we do, because we believe at We Lead Well that leadership and well-being go hand in hand. In order to be an effective leader, you need to have good well-being, and that is your physical, emotional, and mental health. And we really believe that that holistic approach to leadership can be truly transformational. So as well as the podcast, at We Lead Well, we offer coaching in a variety of forms, including one-to-one coaching, group coaching, team coaching, and coach training in schools, because we really think that schools should be environments in which people are encouraged to think, and that's what coaching does. Coaching provides a space for discussion, for exploration, and it really makes the people involved in it think about their role, how they are approaching their role, the challenges that they face and what they can do to overcome those challenges. So we really believe in coaching as an approach that supports both well-being and leadership. And we also offer high quality leadership training through the Resilient Leaders Elements programs, which provide a holistic approach to leadership that we feel like isn't currently offered by the NPQ suite of qualifications. It looks at who you are and what you do and creates really well-rounded, self-aware leaders who are aware of others and environment, have leadership presence, clarity of direction, and are able to make resilient decisions. So, what have we got on the show today? Well, today I've got Annabelle Jeffcoat, who is an expert in all things well-being for teachers. As I was talking to her, I realised just how much expertise she has, how much she knows, and the wealth of ideas that she's got are amazing. So I really hope you're going to enjoy this one. Actually, I know you're going to enjoy this one today. And we do explore some issues that we think are important to well-being in schools, including menopause and female menstruation, that if you're a woman, it's brilliant because you will probably identify with a lot of it, and it might make you rethink some of the things that happen to you on a monthly basis or things that are happening to you because you've reached a particular age. But it's also important for men to recognise the importance of understanding how a woman's body, how it works, and the impact that that can have on how they are able to do their work on a monthly basis, or how the menopause is impacting their ability to do their work at different points. So I think it's really important that we have these discussions. So listen to what Annabelle has to say. I think you're going to learn something, and I think you're going to really enjoy this one. So here she is, the amazing Annabelle Jeffcoat. Annabelle Jeffcoat, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. We've eventually managed to get to talk to each other. So would you mind starting us off by introducing yourself to the listener? Tell them a little bit about you and who you are and what you do and how you've ended up at that point.
Sure, of course. So my name's Annabelle, as you mentioned. I'm a teacher's work-life balance coach, and I help teachers to reduce anxiety and switch off through work-life balance coaching. And my journey very much started with burning out. So similar to where a lot of teachers end up, I found myself working late into the evenings. I would push 16 to 18 hour days. I very rarely took time off. And I very rarely processed any emotions. I would very much run around grabbing food as and when I could. I remember just going into the local shop as I was traveling from one place to another. So in my 20s, I was definitely putting myself last, and I was just trying to be everything for everyone else. And eventually my body said no. And so at the age of 21, I spent my 21st birthday in hospital because I was having multiple seizures and they couldn't pinpoint what it was. I think I was on about 17 tablets. They released me from hospital about 17 tablets a day. And I was just taking these pills, and I felt broken. Like, I was like, is this it? Is this going to be my life? Because I was born with epilepsy, and therefore it was kind of confusing because I'd only ever had one full epileptic seizure. But other than that, I had petit mal, which, if you're not sure what that is, it's just blanking out. It was never body seizures. And so they sent me on my way. I lost my job. I had to quit my job because I just couldn't function. And I eventually went into what's I can only describe as like a Big Brother house. It was just film recording all day, every day. And it was full of people having various types of seizures. And it was the top neurologists in the country would come down and they would review the cases and obviously ask the nurses to do tests and things like that. And I got to the end of the 6 weeks that I was there, and they pretty much turned around to me and said, it's stress. Now, if anyone's ever been to a doctor and they've turned around to you and said, it's stress, I was fuming. Like, I have to admit, I was absolutely fuming. I had like angry tears. I wasn't making it up. I wasn't forcing myself to have seizures. I wanted to have a life. Like, I wanted to live and do normal stuff and have a job and just be able to pay my own way and things like that. And yet what they were telling me was that it was all in my head. Now, this must have been about 15 years ago now. And back then, mental well-being was unheard of. Like, people didn't talk about it. It wasn't. And, you know, this is the upcoming generation. Like, you know, I'm 36 now. So it wasn't that it was where it was really never spoken about. There was whispers of mental health, but it was still something that was seen as like a bad thing or a weakness.
Yeah.
And I came out thinking, this literally, what am I going to do? Like, no one's going to help me. I'm going to have to help myself because no one's going to help me. And so that was like my, we like to call the epiphany, when I just sort of went, I'm going to have to do this myself. And so I went on a good 10-year journey. And initially there was a coach at this event I was at, and she was called the self-saboteur coach, right? Get out of your own way was her tagline. And after all of what I've just mentioned, I thought, right, well, everyone's telling me I'm in my own way, so I'll just give it a go and I'll just see, right? So I signed up for a free call with herself, like a 30-minute free call. 12 months later, my seizures stopped. So it went from, there's nothing we can do for you, like you just have to handle it, to taking back my power. Now, I wasn't healed in 12 months. I still had a lot of processing to do and a lot of healing physically. But for the fact that the seizures had stopped was incredible for me. Like, I was like, this is amazing. Like, I can't remember the last time I had one, and I'd been in stressful environments. Now, the seizures were diagnosed. Now it's known. So if you ever get your driving license now, they actually put on it, do you suffer from dissociative seizures? Right. So it's part of the same as epilepsy, things like that. But back then it was unheard of. Like, they knew in military veterans would get it, potentially alongside PTSD, but was very rarely that civilians were kind of noted about it. It was happening and people do have it. And there's been notifications now that maybe epilepsy was misdiagnosed in some people and it was actually stress related and dissociative. But ultimately, disassociation is, as it sounds, you are breaking away from reality. So if it was low blood sugars before lunch, if I had bright lights, loud noises, anything like that, it would just trigger my body to shut down. And they presumed what was happening was my body was mimicking my epilepsy. So for whatever reason, and it can happen, disassociation can happen in various different ways. But you'd think of this as like the flight response. When you hear people like fight, flight, freeze, or facade as a reaction. My reaction was very much flight from my body. But in my conscious self, I was like, but I want to carry on. Like, I want to keep going. But my body was like, no, I can't do this. So I went through these 12 months and the seizures stopped, which was fantastic. And then I went on a healing journey of nutrition and understanding nutrition and understanding my body and trying to understand, like, how do I stop feeling so anxious? Because once I could feel again, I was then in a situation where I was wired constantly. There was a good few years where I didn't cry. So as soon as I started crying again, that was difficult to stop. It just kept crying. I'd get in the shower and I'd start crying. I was like, I don't even know what I'm crying about. So I spent a good chunk of time feeling various emotions, and it evolved to be grief. So when I was 12, my nan passed away and I didn't grieve. I got an eating disorder by the time I was 16. And again, this is now well known that this can be a trigger for teenagers, where they lose a loved one. And the way that they cope is they start to control food. Now, obviously, no one was going to know that when I was growing up. They weren't going to be aware of these things. They weren't really known back then. And so my grief had then developed over the years into controlling mechanisms like overworking, overdoing. And so once I got past the seizures, I was then in a situation where I was grieving, basically. I spent the latter part of my 20s going through random stages of grief, anger, denial, but it wasn't about anyone that I'd lost in that moment. It was past. So I'm a massive advocate in terms of mental well-being, but I also knew that not all of it was down to that, because I found that with my female cycle and with my menstrual cycle, like, it was worse at certain times of the month.
So I was going to say to you, actually, when you were describing some things then, it sounds very much like the menopause or the perimenopause, which I'm currently going through. So yeah. I can identify with that.
Mm. It is, definitely. And this is where I highlight, and a lot of clients come to me and they're like, oh, you know, I'm really anxious and things like that. And we start off in the mindset stuff because that is supportive and you need that and it's definitely there. But I always feel like it's half the solution, because especially in menopause, your body is in the drop of estrogen. The estrogen receptors are no longer getting the signals that they need. And therefore, the body is adapting and changing in so many ways. When I studied menopause and I was reading about estrogen receptors in the brain causing us to become forgetful and missing things, and then, you know, all these different receptors within the body that suddenly don't have what they need anymore, and you're changing in that way, it can also trigger anxiety and depression. And yeah, I've seen case studies where women have been absolutely fine and then suddenly they've crashed and they're like, nothing's happened. And so it's exactly that. The physical body matters. And so I was experiencing what's known as PMDD, which was pretty much, well, the way I experienced it is 2 weeks before any period that I had, I would cry my heart out.
Is it like PMT sort of turned up to a, like, turned up to 100 for a 2 week period before your period?
Yeah, 100%, exactly that. I would find myself crying, and I remember my mum saying to me, she's like, you can't spend 2 weeks of every month in bits, right? You need to go and see a doctor and get this fixed. But I used to have suicidal thoughts. So I would, like, just be walking down the street thinking I could just walk in front of that bus. Like, and it was so random, because I had enough grounding in a strong family that meant that I wouldn't do it. But to know there's people that it's just physical, like, if their body is out of balance and therefore it's not something that's necessary.
Do you know, it's really interesting that you bring this up, because perimenopause is becoming much more, my brain fog now kicking in. I can't remember the word that I need. It is becoming like, more people are talking about it more, and people are becoming, like, awareness is being built of it, but we're still not talking enough about periods and the menstrual cycle, are we, and the impact that that has on younger women and women before perimenopause in the workplace, because it can be quite, it can have quite a negative impact, can't it? I know that when I had my cycle, even when I was on the pill, as I was coming up to the week that I would have off the packet of, and I would have my, I suppose, pseudo period, I would get really anxious. My brain, my inner voice would start saying things to me that I'm like, I really do, like, I know that's not true, but I really struggled to overcome it. And it would lead to a lot of overthinking and worrying about things. And I think, you know, we don't recognize this enough. We don't talk about it enough. We don't talk about the impact that it has on us in work and what you can do about it. And, you know, like you're saying, how do you spend 2 weeks of the month if you've got PMDD in that state of high anxiety, like very poor mental health? How many people even know about PMDD? It's not even talked about or known about, is it? And I don't know how many women suffer from it, but I just don't think we're at that point yet with the menstrual cycle and with periods that it's as in the public sphere, or that there's not as much awareness as there is of the perimenopause.
I do agree. I feel like it's there's a missing connection. It's not about necessarily, people are talking about periods, like, you know, we'll talk about it, but it's still very much an objective thing, rather than saying, well, actually, you can do something about that, right? I don't experience anxiety before every period anymore, right? I still get slightly sleepy because my progesterone levels have increased. And so therefore, I find that I can be super productive in the first 2 weeks. And in the second 2 weeks, I'm not quite as productive, but I can show myself compassion. And instead of standing there going, oh, you know, why can't I do this? Why can't I get this done? I'm like, you know what, actually, these couple of weeks, I just need to give myself a little bit of a break. Like, I might need a bit longer off, or I might need a bit of extra time. And then on the 2 weeks, I'm more productive. It's the same as thinking, you know, people say, oh, I'm more productive in the morning, or I'm more productive in the evening, right? You play to your strengths. If you know you're not necessarily as able to do things, like extra things, like, don't book extra things in your diary around those 2 weeks. Like, track your period, right? And know that it's going to be a bath time.
It's hard that, isn't it? I think it's really difficult, and it's not something that I ever did. I was talking to a friend the other day, and she was saying she'd had sleep problems, and I was saying, you know, it could be the perimenopause. And then when she looked, she's a little bit younger than me, and when she looked, she noticed that it was in the lead up to a period that she got really bad sleep disturbances. So she's obviously trying to do something about it now. But it makes me think about, you know, the work that you do. Obviously, you've ended up doing work with teachers and school leaders on work-life balance. And I don't think it's something that ever crossed my mind when I was teaching or was anywhere even on the landscape, even for me as a female school leader, thinking about the females, because it's mainly a heavily female profession, that we need to address that when we're thinking about work-life balance, that that's part of what we should be taking into consideration when we think about our ability to work and how much energy we've got for it and how much is manageable or doable for us.
100%. I feel like, yes, as you said, it is a female-led profession. There are a lot of men in there now as well, which is fantastic. But with it, it's that, you know, at what capacity, what's our capacity? And I was talking to one of our clients a little while back, and she had what we like to call an aha moment, which was like, right, it just suddenly landed. And she messaged me and went, my work-life balance isn't the same as everyone else. Now, that might sound really simple, right? But in that moment, it landed for her, and she went, oh, like, there isn't a right or wrong way of doing it. And I was like, no, there isn't, right? There is no right or wrong way. What matters is, what do you need, right? What do you as an individual need to thrive? And that's what matters. Some people can come into school early, do an extra hour or two, and then leave at 3 or 3:30 or 4, right? So they prefer doing their day at the beginning and then going home. And there's other people, they're like, I don't want to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, right? That doesn't work for me. I'd rather spend an extra hour, for example. And there's other people that, no, I'm contracted my hours. I'm going in my hours. That's all I'm doing. I'm not doing any extra, which is, again, absolutely okay. And there's other people that want to work a bit on a Saturday, maybe a bit on a Sunday. If you are doing work and you're enjoying it and you're loving teaching, right, this is where you can't compare to like NQTs, right, and people coming into teaching, because they're still very much like, it's all new and exciting and they're young and energetic and they're like, oh, and that's great. It's not going to last. Because
and I do think that there is, it's with caution, that, isn't it? Because even though you love something, to spend all your time doing that thing and become obsessed by it, and, you know, if you're getting up at 7 and you're working until 11 or 12 o'clock, even though you might love it, there's still a danger that leads to burnout. I mean, one of the questions I was going to ask you was, it's a very young age at 21, isn't it, to reach burnout? So what had happened to you that you, I experienced a burnout. Listeners will be sick of me going on about it because I talk about it all the time. But I was probably 40, it was 2020, so I was probably 44 at the time. It was probably a 4-year period that led up to it, maybe. But see, I've got the perimenopausal brain fog now. I just saw a leaf outside and my mind just went, oh, just drop that idea right where it is. But it will come back to me. I think what I was saying was, wasn't it, was your burnout. I was 44, you were 21. So how did that happen for you so young?
I'm just going to tag back on what you were mentioning a moment and I'll come to that. But in terms of when people have a love or passion for something, I 100% agree that you can love something, but you will eventually get bored of it, right? If you had to do what you loved all the time, you would get bored. Even if it was painting or crafting or whatever, you would get bored. And there's something I do on our 5-day free Discover Life Outside Work challenge we do for teachers. And it's called the 9 boxes. Now, it's designed by a psychologist. It wasn't designed by myself.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah, tell us more.
Yeah, Susan Jeffers designed this. It's from the book Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I was reading it on the train when I was living a life of chaos. And I grabbed a pen and a piece of paper, just a bit of biro, and I just drew 9 boxes. And what she's, and we've slightly adapted it at Balance for Teachers, but the principle stays the same. Your life consists of lots of boxes. And if you live in one box, you are ignoring the other parts of yourself. So in holistic coaching, we talk about parts of self, because there are various parts. You might be a mum, you might be a sister, you might be a brother, a father, you might be someone that loves tennis, or you might be someone that, there are various versions of yourself in any given moment. And therefore, one of your boxes is teaching, and then you'd have 8 other boxes. And what will happen is, when you live in one box, you start to ignore the other parts of yourself. And what happens is you start becoming irritable with people, or you start snapping, or start going, oh, just fed up with like teaching is all the time, and this sort of thing. So what I tend to do is use the 9 boxes as a navigation for myself when I am either living in one box or I'm ignoring a box. So I tend to look at it sometimes and say, well, for myself, am I living in one box? If I am, then I need to create some space for other stuff, because I don't want to be doing the same thing all the time. This is it's called a cognitive distortion, and it's called the all or nothing. So it's one of, I think it's 15 cognitive distortions, and it's the way you perceive the world. Now, often I get this, and I used to have this, an all or nothing mindset about things. I'm either all in or I'm doing nothing. And that is very much known as the burnout cycle. So I'm like doing everything and then I collapse, and I'm doing everything and then I collapse. And it's the way we perceive the world. It's not what the world is putting on us.
Yeah.
We perceive the world, and therefore we can take our power back.
It's interesting that I know you said you were going to come back to something else that you'd said a minute ago, but I like this conversation. It's going all over the place. But this idea of how we perceive the world, I think, is really linked. I don't know if you find it in your work that you do in terms of balance for teachers, is that there is a culture in teaching, or there's a myth in teaching of there's so much work to do that you have to work 60 hours a week. And this feels like an example of that to me. Like, that's how teachers perceive teaching. That's how we're taught to be. The culture of teaching and the culture of school leadership creates the perception that it's a 60, 70 hour a week job, and there is that much work, and we have to do it. And it feels like that's not really how it is. But that's how a lot of school leaders and teachers perceive it to be. I don't know if you find that in the work that you do.
Oh yeah, I mean, you can flick on social media and you'll see that straight away. It's what we call in holistic coaching, we call it a story. So we have our beliefs or stories within our mind of how we perceive. And I like to describe it as if you imagine you had a film reel behind your eyes and you are playing out a film constantly, right? Now you are the writer of your own film. You can rewrite your film, you can rewrite scenes if you want to. But we often leave ourselves feeling powerless. So up until now, you've had experiences that have created this film. And then you're looking around and you're going, right, okay, so if I want to be a teacher, I have to work 60, 70 plus hours. Now, this is down to repetition, authority, and impact. So if we keep hearing the same things and it's come from authorities such as the news or social media when we're on it, and it's had impact, right? Especially when it's been in the newspaper, or it's been, you're seeing burnout statistics and stuff like that. We then find ourselves in a situation where we're now believing that it's true, and that is 100% fact. The with the ego inside the mind, there is no sort of halfway house. It's either this color or that color, right? There's never a gray, right? And so we have to consciously find that. But we'll have this story or belief where if we've been in a school and that school doesn't necessarily have leadership that believes in work-life balance or things like that and believes 70, 67 plus hour weeks, we are then going to leave that school, go to another school and feel like it's the same thing, or we're just going to leave teaching altogether because that's what we believe it is. And it's not true. And often when I'm coaching clients, I'll say to them, but is that 100% true? Right? Is that 100%? If you went and spoke to every single teacher, would they come back to you and say, yes, I work 70 hours? Right? Now, this can be triggering for a few listeners, right? Because they might be sat there thinking, but it is true. You haven't seen my workload and you're starting to try to prove and defend and everything else.
I totally agree with you, because I think the thing that you have to accept, I don't know if you've read the book by Oliver Jeffers. That's but they're books that my children used to read, Oliver Jeffers books. Oliver someone else beginning with a J, the 4,000 Weeks book, in which he says the first thing you have to accept is that you will never finish a to-do list. Like, that your to-do list will always be there. And you'll never get through it because you're always adding things to it. So essentially, like, you go, well, that is right then, when people are saying, if you wanted to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in teaching or school leadership, you could find lots of things to do, but within 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you'd probably be dead. So it would have no impact. Because you can't keep it up. And I think it comes back to what you were saying before about the person who said, oh, it's my work-life balance, it's what suits me, and it's what enables me to be able to give my best to the children in the class. Because if you're spending all that time outside the classroom doing so much work that you're completely exhausted and a little, I sort of, when I was burning out, I described myself as being like a bit of a husk. I was like a dry husk of my former self. Like, you've no use to anybody, are you? And that's the thing. Yeah, of course you can say there's all this work to do, Like there always is. But the Pareto principle, have you heard of that?
I haven't, no.
It's the 80-20 principle. So
I've heard of it.
So only the thing, like 20% of the things that you actually do have an impact. The other 80% is just stuff that you're doing and it's not making any difference. So it's really interesting that you say that, because it is like, does the work fit to fill the time that you give it?
Oh, 100%. It's called the
That's something else. That's another principle, isn't it?
Parkinson's law.
That's it. Parkinson's law. Yes.
I had Freudian in my head then. I was like, it's not Freudian. That's something completely different. Parkinson's law. And I've had this with clients, actually. They're like, oh, you know, one of my clients said about a year or so ago, she said, I've got all these books to mark. It's going to take me all weekend. I said, is it really? Right. Watch your language. Right. Is it going to take you all weekend? Well, yeah, it will do. So, because I'll just procrastinate and I won't do it. I said, look, all I want you to do is pick the number of books you want to do and choose the amount of time and then see if you can do it. And she did it. Right. Nowadays, she just gets to fly through it. Still doesn't like it. Like, but she can fly through it a lot faster because she just goes, right, I'm going to take an hour to do this many books. And that's how much long it takes. If you tell yourself it's going to take a weekend, it's going to take a weekend. So we have more power than we give ourselves credit for. And I was just thinking a moment when you were speaking there, was it's like with boundaries, we get it backwards. Like I often hear teachers frustrated and they're like, oh, people overstepping my boundaries. I need to put boundaries into place.
Before we hear more from Annabelle about boundaries, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat. Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of different information for schools to tap into. Head Teacher Chat is more than just a platform. It's a community, a support system, and a trusted companion in the ever-evolving journey of educational leadership. Whether you're looking for resources, community support, or expert insights, Head Teacher Chat is there for you every step of the way. To find the support you need or to join the conversation, head over to Head Teacher Chat's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn pages, or visit their website at headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat, it's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
I'm like, no, boundaries are not there to push people away or control others' actions. Boundaries are there for you to be able to be your best self. They are guidelines to help you to be your best self. So if that means I need to have a lunch break every day, that is your boundary or guideline, because I know that by the afternoon I'm exhausted, right? I've had teachers that have incorporated meditations into their classrooms. So they'll come back after break, they'll help themselves regulate, they'll help their children regulate. And that's a guideline that they have in their classroom. Right? That's something that we need together in order to get through the afternoon. Right? So guidelines aren't something, they will at first be put in after you found and experienced something you don't like. But it's about saying, what do I need to support myself? Well, I need to eat breakfast because I know I feel better once I've had breakfast. Right? It's a version of parenting self and being like, well, I know that I feel better if I eat. I know that I feel worse. So, you know, if you have low blood sugars, for example, that triggers anxiety. It actually, if your blood sugars get low, it causes a stress response in the body.
Yeah.
So a lot of teachers say to me, well, I didn't get a chance to eat all day. Right. Unfortunately, you've just made your situation worse. Right. And you might think, well, I didn't make it worse. I haven't got time. I've got to look after the kids. I've got to do it. You are the only person that can put that boundary in place. And that requires communication and being able to support yourself. And again, people might feel really triggered listening to this and thinking, no, like, you know, the leader at my school won't let me. Or if you're a leader and you think, well, my staff need me, like I can't. And so you end up with this like communication battle. And for me, it's about one of our key principles here at Balance for Teachers is practice what you preach. And I've heard you speak about this, Vicky, and you speaking about, like, you know, if you're going to be a leader, you need to look after yourself so that others can, you can inspire others.
Yeah, because what you're describing there is that I'll do what you do what I do, but I'm so terrified that you're going to look at me and think I'm lazy, not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that I'm going to do this. But then I'm creating the impression that you need to do that as well. So the head teacher who says, I've had so many head teachers say, I can't sit at my desk and have a break during the day and have a cup of tea. What if someone looks through the window and sees me doing nothing?
Mm.
Then they think, oh, they're having a break. Maybe I should have a break. Whereas if you just every time they look through the window, you're working or you're out, you know, you're doing things, they go, oh, that's what I need to do. I need to not have a break because they don't have a break, so I better not have one. Mm. And it's a vicious cycle, that, isn't it? It's like one looking at the other and going, oh, they do that, I better do that. And then they look at them and go, well, they're doing that, so I better do that. It is.
And this, for me, this is what the education system is at the moment. And what we've kind of created, not just Balance for Teachers, but anyone working with leaders, teachers in education, yourself included, we're creating this ripple effect. Because for me, it wasn't about, I see a lot of people talk about, I'm going to change the education sector. Like, I'm going to, and I'm like, no, you're not.
No, because you won't, like, as it stands, we won't change it, because what needs to happen is that there needs to be more money in education. The government needs to be better at recruiting new teachers, because at the minute, the statistics are terrifying. Something like only 36% of places have been filled in, and I think it's something like 12% in business studies and 17% in physics. So, you know, we're not even going to have teachers in the future, but, you know, and that's something that the government need to do and aren't doing. But we need more money so we could have more teachers, so that teachers could have more time. Like, I strongly believe that no teacher should ever have to teach a full 5-hour day. You should have at least an hour off timetable every single day. And I know in primary schools it works slightly differently and they have their PPA time and it's an afternoon. I don't particularly like the idea that you've got to squeeze everything into a morning or an afternoon, but the fact is that in the foreseeable future that isn't going to change. So no matter how many initiatives there are or how many papers the government produce about reducing workload, it's not going to reduce, because there's not enough money invested in education. Or maybe we're not spending the money how we need to spend it, so we have more people on the ground, so that the people who are doing the job have more time to do the work that needs doing in fewer hours. So like you're saying, that then becomes the responsibility of the teacher or the school leader, doesn't it?
Yeah. So for me, it's like I walked in thinking, well, as one person, I'm not going to change the education system, right? The money's not there, right? You know, if we're talking about the UK, so obviously there's lots of different countries. And I mean, most countries are in debt. Like, they're not, you know, they're trying to, and that's normal. It's normal for countries to be in debt and everything else. And it's how, I'm not an economist, I don't understand it all, but that's all normal. But, you know, you have no power. You cannot control the decisions unless you're going to write a white paper, or you're going to go into the government and you're going to protest and everything else. That's not going to change. And even if you did that, it would take a number of years. It's not going to affect the teachers in education today. And even what you were saying there, when we were talking about, you know, the story of 70 plus hour weeks, I went to a university the other day. So I was like, do you know what? I love working with teachers, but what if I could help them before they've even started teaching? And so I just messaged a university that was local to me. And I said, do you mind if I come in and do a talk? I just want to see if this will be useful. And I was stood there talking, and you could hear, like, one of them raised their hand and said, you know, I went to the school and the woman there said, unless you like working long hours, and I wouldn't bother teaching. And it's like, that's the message. And they also didn't have a full year. They said that they couldn't pay for me to come in, because they said, we haven't got a full year of people. So the money wasn't there to bring people in, which is what they would normally do. I said, I don't care, I'll come in as a guest. Like, I'm not bothered, but I do want this to change. And so for them to realize that they're, you know, I gave a couple of, just give you an example. We have a 12-week program. And on that 12-week program, I asked them at the beginning, you know, how many hours are you working at the moment? and then ask them at the end. And one of the teachers came back and said, I've dropped 20 hours a week in 12 weeks and I feel incredible. She's still working a 52-hour week, but for her, that's fine, right? She's loving it. She's like, oh, I've got so much time. She was doing 70 hours. She found there's so much time left, right? She could cut it down even more if she wants to, but she was fine. And so with it, we get to appreciate that there's this ripple effect, that the only way you're going to disprove this belief that is kind of ingrained in the education system is one teacher at a time or one leader at a time being able to create this ripple effect in their school. And then what will eventually happen is the schools that people like to call toxic, it seems to be like a social media word that's gone out, they disappear. They won't last because they won't be able to get staff. And so the leaderships will change. And so what will happen is you'll start to heal it from the inside out. And for me, that is more viable than let's scream and shout at government and see if it makes a difference. There will be someone out there who will be able to make, they'll have the money, the finances, they'll be able to change things at the top. But why not have a bottom up and a top down approach? The body does. The body works that way. We can work that way too. So for me personally, it is about the stories and the language we use and how we communicate within education. And we've got to explore it. As a leader, you cannot create a work-life balance for someone. Right. I hear this often where leaders are like, well, how do we help well-being in our teachers? And how do we? And it's hard, right? It's challenging. Because if someone is in the mindset and they're stuck in an overworking mindset, then they do need the support of a professional to help them, right? Whatever that looks like, whether it's a coach, a counselor, or someone else, you can inspire them through your actions and show them what's possible, but you can't force them to do it. Right. There's no way, like having well-being days where you're going, but you have to attend a well-being day. The ones that are, you know, already snowed under, like stressing about the reports, not sleeping, like all this sort of stuff, they are going to be fuming and angry if they're then forced to go to a well-being day. It doesn't work for them. Right. Whereas being able to inspire someone with, like you were saying, taking a break, showing them that it's okay to take, it's the easy stuff. Right. What we coach at Balance for Teachers isn't hard, but it's challenging to accept. And it's challenging to implement, not for time, because all our strategies are designed around implementation throughout the day rather than, things like changing your language or changing your approach to doing something rather than, you know, you have to read all of our tasks, like 15 minutes to watch, and then that's it. Like you're done. Whereas, you know, you can get these courses which are really long and in depth, and it's not. I remember being burnt out, and I did not have the time to study. I couldn't even focus for 5 minutes, let alone process what was going on. So I think for leaders especially, you can inspire through your actions. We always say actions are louder than words, right? You can inspire through your actions, and you can praise teachers in terms of them being able to take care of themselves. And when I say praise, it might just be highlighting it slightly, going, you know, I love what you did there. Like, that was fantastic. And just noticing, seeing and hearing people rather than having a culture which is less about relationships and more about numbers and hitting targets. And, you know, instead of saying hello to your staff, saying, you know, did you manage to finish XYZ? Right. It is the little things that matter the most. And I'm guessing you find that as well when you're working with leaders.
I think that there's also people are praised for their hard work, which generally means hours that they've devoted to their job rather than being praised for their good work that's had an impact on what's happening in the school or what's happening for the staff or for the children. And that, I think, hard work and working hard, I think they're phrases that should be banned to start off with.
I have a video that we've got on our social media page that we put out, and a lot of people have resonated with it. I said, you know, have you been called a hard worker? stop believing it, right? Stop calling yourself a hard worker. Stop letting people call you a hard worker, because who wants to be a hard worker? But what happens is we identify as it. And then our identity becomes about being a hard worker. And therefore, when we're not working hard, we can't sit still because we feel shame or guilt is against who we are. And we need to redefine our identity and discover who are we, so that we can then align with what we want. I spent years thinking, but that's who I am, right? I used to get like A for Annabelle. Oh, well done, you got an A for Annabelle again. Right. And so I felt insignificant if I wasn't achieving. Like if I wasn't achieving, if I wasn't top of the class, if I wasn't, you know, winning trophies or things like that, then I didn't exist. I didn't get attention. Like that wasn't, you know, something that I could do. I didn't matter as a person. I was like, who would even want to be, who'd like, talk to me if I wasn't doing this stuff? And over the years, I've come to know who I am, that I get to a point now, I'm like, I'm just not doing that. Like, I don't, a 7 out of 10 is fine for me nowadays. I'm more than happy with 7 out of 10, because my 7 out of 10 is someone else's 10 out of 10. And so that was a huge, huge moving point for me in terms of the way I looked at stuff. But yeah, in terms of your question earlier, by 21, it was, as I was mentioning, the grief from my nan, because I didn't grieve. What I did was I controlled my food, and then I also work as well. So I hid in my work. So I would literally go to school. I'd work really hard. I'd spend time doing homework. I'd go dancing in the evenings, and I'd spend a lot of time trying to prove myself and prove my worth, and numbing out from anything. And that went from the age of 12 to 21. So it was a good long period of time where, because therapy wasn't a thing then, you know, my parents never were like, oh, let's send you to therapy. It just wasn't, it was still an American thing. It's like, that's an American thing. Nowadays, it amazes me the number of people, I love it. Like I'm chuffed by it, but I speak to people like, oh, I'm going to go see my therapist later. Like I hear it all the time nowadays. And I'm like, this is fantastic. Like, this is great. And as we were chatting about earlier, I would then love for people to start saying, you know, I'm seeing, and Zoe's kind of doing this, like when people are now thinking, like now they're starting conversations where they're like, oh, have you tried Zoe? You know, I've tried Zoe. Have you tried Zoe? And people are becoming aware of their physical body more. So they're now aware of mental health. But actually, in order for your mental health to be well, you have the gut-brain axis, and your gut is attached to your brain, right? So if you have, it's called dysbiosis. So you have an imbalance in your gut, you can leach out something called LPS, and that can get into your system. It can get into your brain. It can cause inflammation. So if you're not able to support a healthy gut, serotonin levels are going to be lower, because most of your serotonin levels is from your gut. It's not from your brain. But this pathway between your brain and your gut, yes, it goes brain to gut. So yes, you have the nervous system and it goes out, but guess what? Everything goes back up. So it goes both ways. So if you put things in your body that don't serve you, not just food, but chemicals, like the stuff, your skin is an organ. You put things on your skin, it's going to leach into your body. And when I first went into healing my physical body, I didn't do the complicated stuff, right? I just went into, what products am I using on my skin? Like, what am I, you know, what am I bathing in? What am I showering in? Like, are these products that are full of chemicals or heavy metals or things like that? Could I reduce some of those? And they've noticed this. They've noticed this in children being born, that there's higher levels of toxicity even when we're born, right? So it's not even about what you're putting on your skin, but it's what your parents put on their skin and their parents. And so for me, like a big why for me when I'm doing stuff is, when I have children, I want to be as clean as possible. Now, you're never going to be 100%, right, ever, because we've got pollution and we've got everything else. But I can say to myself, well, how can I live day to day that will mean that my child gets a better life? Now, that's just my why, right? That for me lights me up. and it gives me motivation to study and do what I do, because I don't want anyone to ever reach the age of 21 and be having seizures, right? It's my experience that has led to that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that one of the things I talk about at We Lead Well is, you know, to lead well, you have to be well. Mm-hmm. And that means mentally, emotionally, and physically. And there is a lot of talk about activity, and I do think physical activity is absolutely vital to our emotional and mental well health, mental well-being. I think you can't have any of the three of, like, the mental, the emotional, the physical. They all rely on each other, don't they? And it's interesting that you talk about, if people don't know, Zoe is it's a program that you can, you have to sign up and you have to pay for it. They do tests on your blood sugar, your blood fat, how quickly your body clears blood fat, and your gut microbiome. And then it tells you which foods will be good for you and which foods you should avoid. And it's really interesting. And I have been doing it, and it has made a difference to me. But I think there's not as much focus on probably diet and what we've learned about diet over recent years. You know, we're still on the, you know, the plate, isn't it? And it's the make sure you get this amount of this. And it's not quite that simple, I don't think. Because a lot of the time, I think tired teachers or school leaders, like you're saying, they reach for something easy to eat or something that's very quick to eat, because you've only got 10 minutes because you're preparing for the next lesson, and you know you're running around trying to do photocopying at lunchtime, so you barely get any lunchtime, so you just reach when you're going out to work for the easiest thing. So you take a bagel and think, I'll toast that at work, or some crumpets or something equally starchy and ultra processed. But I think we don't realize how much of an impact our diet and our physical activity is having. But then you're taking that a step even further to say, you know, think about what else you're doing, because all of these things affect the toxicity levels in our body, don't they? And then that obviously impacts on our brain, which impacts on our mental well-being and impacts on our emotions. So some of these things, I mean, it might trigger some people who say, well, what can I do? I've got to buy, everything that I buy is like in plastic, or it's this or it's that. But even if it's something as simple as, you know, trying to use a bar of soap instead of a shower gel that comes out of a plastic bottle, you know, and making sure that the soap that you're buying is, you know, made from ingredients that are not harmful or toxic. That's one small change that you can make that might make a difference. But I think, like you're saying, it's a holistic approach. Mm. And is that what you do in terms of your work with people, looking at that holistic approach as well? Because you talked about anxiety and depression. There is thinking now, isn't it, the gut-brain axis, that if your diet isn't good, it can be linked to anxiety and depression.
Yeah, and I think we also forget about the liver as well. So as you were mentioning earlier, it's called allostatic overload. So your body can reach a point where it cannot detox the stuff. Now, I'm not sitting here saying go on a detox. Going on a detox was the worst thing I did when I was under stress, because it is stressful for the body. It's also very much a case of with detoxing. Again, not right or wrong, just needs to be right for you. But detoxing in itself, we take it to the extreme sometimes. And we're like, we're going to do this 28-day no, you're not. You're going to live your life and you're just going to say, well, what things in my, I call it tweak of the week, what things in my life right now that don't serve me, right? What can I swap it for that helps me feel better? So with that, we have this ability to do things gradually rather than feeling like, oh, I'm suddenly going to take everything out of my diet, because it's restrictive. And as you were mentioning, something you said earlier, and I was like, for me, it's very much the mindset. So what's driving the behavior is the mindset. And you were saying, like, with leaders, they're grabbing a quick thing. That's because you believe you don't have any time, right? Yeah. Believe you don't have time, and therefore you're like, I need something quick. I don't have time. You might not consciously think that, but that's your behavior that's happening, is that fear of, I'm going to run out of time. Now, this fear runs really deep. There's lots of deep stories under that fear. But we can work from the top and through those stories gradually. And you might say to yourself, well, I'm just going to pause for a second and I'm going to go, right, how can I create a little bit of time so I can prepare my food? Or when I'm out and about, what things can I get from a little shop that's local to me that are healthier options when I'm on the go, rather than finding myself going, oh, I'm just going to buy like a Mars bar or something really quick just to hype up. Because guess what? If you hamp up like low blood sugar, if you hamp up your blood sugars really quickly, you've just caused inflammation in your body. Inflammation does not serve you. It just makes your body work extra hard. And so your liver in itself is trying to heal. And part of your liver's process, and this comes back to what we were talking about in terms of PMS, and I had what's known as estrogen dominance. So you have your good estrogen, there's three types of estrogen, and then you have I won't call it bad estrogen, it's still estrogen, but negative. And if the liver can't handle it, it's going to put it back in the system. And so what happened is I ended up with this estrogen dominance, and therefore my stress was going up. I was just generally feeling horrendous because my body was out of balance. And hormones, there's such a fine balance to them. So I would say if anyone's thinking, oh no, but what do I do about nutrition? It's complicated, right? It's really complicated. This is why it's not cheap to work with a nutritionist or, you know, things like that, because it takes time when it's individual. But when you are thinking about things as I did, like just on a more open scale to start with, stay with the basics and start with balancing your blood sugars. Because if you can balance your blood sugars, hormones are a lot happier, right? If you're spiking throughout the day and you're grabbing a quick sugary fix, or, you know, you're just having long periods without food, and then you're going to experience these crashes, just like you do with caffeine. Like you have your caffeine and then you crash, and then you have, like, I haven't had caffeine for a good 7 years now because I didn't react well to like coffee and stuff like that. My days are very balanced. Do I have an end of the day where I can't push any further? Yes. Right. Hit 7 o'clock, I'm done. Right. After that, I'm unwinding and I'm getting ready for bed. But I don't grab caffeine. I don't need to grab caffeine in the morning. I don't need to grab it during the day. I have my own levels. If I'm going to have something, I'm going to have like ginger and water. And some people might, that's gross. That's just my thing, right?
I just thought, oh, no, that's not for me.
But if I wanted to have a pick-me-up, but like I said, most of the time I don't. It's just that ginger's anti-inflammatory, and it's just something that I tried once and went, I actually quite like the taste of this. So you find what works for you, but ultimately I would say the number one thing is the blood sugar balance, in order to help you throughout the day. And it's easy to find stuff on that. In terms of what we do, yeah, so we work on mindset initially, because even your nutritional behaviors are down to your mindset. So yeah. We do a 5-day free challenge, and you can just, do you mind if I say my website, is that all right?
Oh yeah, feel free. Yeah,
it's www.worklifebalanceforteachers.com, and on there there's a 5-day challenge. Obviously if you're a leader you can do it too, and you can offer it to your staff as well. It's completely free, and I do it at the beginning of each term to help people to just reset and go through the next term with an idea of where they're heading. And that 5-day free challenge is like the first week we do on what's called the accelerator program. And the way the accelerator program works is that we have a 12-week program where we have Monday to Friday me time tasks, which are 15 minutes. And then on a Saturday, it's a nutritional task. So you can't do the Saturday until you've done the Monday to Fridays and you've worked through that. And then once you've worked through that and you've created space for yourself, then you can start tackling the nutritional side of things. Because for me, and part of the nutrition is we also creep in sleep and activity. As you said, things matter. If your sleep isn't working, then your hunger hormones are all out of balance, right? There's been scientific studies that have shown there's ghrelin and leptin. So ghrelin's your hunger hormone, leptin is your feeling full. They go out of balance when you're tired. Right.
Oh, I mean, everybody knows that, don't they? When is the time you want to reach for a double decker? It's when you're feeling absolutely shattered, isn't it? And you just go, yeah. I need a double decker.
Yeah. And all you really need is a nap.
Like, yeah.
Just app. Like, it's not that you need, you just, it's like when it's late at night and you're thinking, oh, I'll just eat something because I feel tired, when you could just go to bed. But you've lost the, because you've pushed past that point and you're already exhausted. And so people starting at that exhausted stage, I wouldn't be sitting here expecting you to suddenly be like, right, well, I'm going to, and this is, and I did this multiple times and tripped over my own feet. I think we've all been there, where I've gone, oh, I'm going to start this, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to change that, I'm going to do this. I'm going to, no, small, really small steps, really small, make massive changes, massive changes. And I think of it as being that lazy person, right? Like, but think, if I was a lazy person, what's the least I would do to make this happen? And that's where I'm going to start, right? And again, being lazy isn't a bad thing. It's what we attach to the word lazy, and we feel it's like a bad thing, because resting is actually part of the human body, right? We have to rest, right?
Yeah, there's a great book. I mean, we've been talking for ages, so we're going to have to wrap it up. But there is a great book, and I need to find it. And it's about rest. And the importance of rest. It's called Rest is Resistance by Tricia Hersey, H-E-R-S-E-Y. Free yourself from grind culture and reclaim your life. And I think if we finish there, because I think it's really important to understand, like, rest is about stopping and breathing and just being. It's not, I'm going to go out and run a half marathon, or I'm going to knit a jumper. It is just like actually resting. Sometimes resting your brain, and like how important that is, because a lot of us just don't get those moments of rest in the day at all, until it's like watching something on TV at night and you just lie on the settee, and by then you're just completely exhausted and you fall asleep.
Yeah, I was going to say this. It's slight. I would slightly tweak it in terms of, for some people, the word stop can feel too much. It's like, that's it. There's just stop, pause. Like, all you're doing is pausing.
Yeah,
and you can do stuff like, when people pause initially, for people that have been on the go constantly for a long time, pausing is ridiculously challenging. The body just feels like you've just hit a brick wall, and so you might not be able to pause yet, and that's okay. If you need to do things like you said, knitting or going for a walk, there are actually 7 different types of rest, and I'm not going to go into it because I know we need to wrap up, but it might be social rest and you just need to be away from people, right? It might be physical rest. It might be that you actually do want to go do something physical to burn off some adrenaline, right? Rest can have multiple different versions, and there isn't a right or wrong to it. It's literally, what does your body need?
We need to talk again. We need to do another podcast episode, because there are so many things. You're so knowledgeable. You know so much. It's amazing. So you must come back and do another podcast episode where we can, I think we really need to explore that physical aspect of well-being. You know, like you're talking about the sleep, the rest, activity, all of those things. I think people would really appreciate a podcast on that. So if you'll come back, that would be amazing. So you told us your website. Where else can people find you?
So when you go to our website, I've popped it all on the main page. Just scroll down the main page, you'll see all of our social media channels, which you'll be able to then click on and go through there. I realize I've got to keep it simple. So it's one website, it's all on there.
Fantastic. Annabelle, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I think there's lots for people to take away with regard to how they think about their own well-being, and actually recognizing that it's a choice and that they do have agency in it, and that, you know, it's a responsibility that you have to yourself to look after yourself. I don't want to trigger anybody, but I do keep saying it, that, you know, of course workplaces and organizations have a responsibility to look after and support your well-being. It's also a personal responsibility that you have to yourself, isn't it, to be as well as possible. So thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we will see you for another episode at some point.
Sounds good. Thank you.
I am sure that you will be taking away some really great ideas from Annabelle there. I want to say thank you to her for an amazing interview in which she shared so many really useful strategies for well-being, and she's actually given me lots of reading and searches to do. I'll be tapping things into Google and looking more at some of the things that she referred to. So thank you so much, Annabelle. What a great interview. If you are interested in any of the coaching programs that we offer at We Lead Well and you'd like to have a chat with me, I always love chatting with people about coaching and what I could offer them. Please get in touch with me. It's vicky@weleadwell.co.uk. And don't forget also that we're offering free membership to the Women Lead Well Network currently. So if you would like to join us, please do email me as well, vicky@weleadwell.co.uk, or you can go on the website at www.weleadwell.co.uk and you can leave me a message on there. That is all we have time for today. It seems like the weather is picking up here. We've had a couple of really nice days, so I'm hoping that spring is on the way. The days are getting longer, so please try and get outside after work and enjoy the fresh air, or while you're in work, but do something that brings you joy every week. See your friends, go to the cinema, go out for a meal, go for a walk, engage in some sporting activity or whatever it might be. Look after yourself and have some time to enjoy yourself. So I will speak to you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast is brought to you in partnership with headteacherchats.com and Progressive Masculinity, and was sponsored by Schools UK.